Wednesday, March 27, 2024. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope it is off to a good start. Hope you, your family, your friends, you are all staying strong. You are all staying healthy. Of course, we have Easter coming up this next weekend. Maybe you're off for Good Friday this week. Hope it is going well in your world right now. But let me ask you this. How are those March Madness brackets looking? Do you have some good kindling to keep you warm? If you need to light that fire? Because I'm telling you, that was a rough opening weekend. You know, I knew this 2024 NCAA tournament was going to be unpredictable, and it has been exactly that. I mean, teams that we thought were capable of being contenders are already gone, and teams we thought might be Cinderellas are also already gone, and some of the teams that looked like they were limping into the tournament, kind of running on fumes, not looking all that strong, they're still going. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And we are now to the Sweet 16. And so I want to take a brief look. How are those Daily Dose brackets looking in our Daily Dose Bracket Challenge? And right now, I'm going to update those standings for you. Currently, through that first weekend, we have Manu the Great's picks. He is tied for first place. They have UConn as their champion. They are tied with Jimmy's Expert Bracket. Both are tied for first. Jimmy's Expert Bracket, which I'm assuming that's Young Jimmy. Maybe that's just an assumption on my part, but I'm assuming that's him. He has Houston as his champ. So Houston and UConn right now on top of the bracket. Lulu's winning bracket has Purdue, and they are currently in third place, pretty solid. Jay Daly, which I actually believe might be Mrs. Daily Dose, is in fourth place. They have Arizona. Mama Joy and Jackson's picks are in fifth place. They both have the Houston Cougars. And they are also tied for fifth place with Mark Niners, who also has Arizona. All three of those are tied for fifth place in our bracket. And then Billy O is in, I guess it would be, what, eighth place? And Billy O has UConn. You know, what is crazy about this year, and I'm not trying to blow fake smoke or anything like that, but what's crazy about this year is every year, myself and Big Rob, we are usually contenders in the bracket challenge. And right now, me and Big Rob are doing very, very poorly this year. I don't know what it is. Maybe we went too upset happy. I don't know, but it is a crazy year in our brackets. We're always up there. Right now, not doing so well. My bracket is crashing and burning hard. But I will also say this. Remember, the first weekend does not a bracket champion make. You must finish strong with the championship game to really give yourself a chance. Because I've seen a lot of brackets looking strong first day, looking strong first weekend, and then the next weekend they lose all their contenders and they're out. They finish, you know, worse than everyone else. So you really have to have those late picks come through because those late picks are what give you the points. We can still see some big, big changes. Remember, we will be sending a Daily Dose basketball t-shirt to our winner, so long as our winner, you know, actually tunes in and listens and finds out that won. So I'm telling you, make sure that you keep checking in. My bracket is going to be heating up my home in the fireplace because my bracket is just flaming hot garbage. I don't know where it went so wrong, but I know that these things happen. Speaking of kindling, I want to get into one story real quick before we jump fully in. Did anyone see some of the stuff that ESPN was putting out over the weekend? Because you know I have kind of a love-hate relationship with ESPN. Mostly, I love to hate ESPN. But ESPN posted on their social media platform that people are more excited about the women's NCAA tournament than the men's NCAA tournament this year. Hey, There is no question with teams like South Carolina and LSU and Iowa and superstars like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Juju Watkins that the women's game is getting some much needed excitement. And make no mistake, it is much needed. Cool. I'm happy for the women's game. I am glad that people are actually kind of excited about women's basketball. I've told you, I coached girls basketball at the high school level. And I can tell you this, when you are playing a game, and a lot of times they would do double headers with the varsity. So you would have the girls play varsity, and then you would have the guys come in and play. And so many times administration would come to us and tell us, hey, this week, we're going to switch that up. We're going to have the guys go first, and then the girls get the primetime slot. Great. And I would go tell my players, hey, great news. We get the primetime slot this week. And they'd go, ugh, we don't want it. What do you mean you don't want it? You're going to be in primetime. They go, do you know how disrespectful it is when the guys are playing to a packed house and about midway through the first quarter, everyone leaves? We'd rather be the first game. We'd rather play first and then have our big crowd for the fourth quarter. And so I actually started pushing for that. But again, I understand sometimes the girls get slighted as far as excitement around the program, as far as excitement around their game. People are going to watch guys more. That's just how it is. So don't get me wrong. I am excited that women's basketball is getting more eyes on their product. I genuinely am. They need some excitement. Okay, so ESPN comes out and they say, hey, there's actually more excitement this year for the women's tournament than the men's tournament. I mean, you can say there's more excitement this year, maybe than ever before in the history of the women's tournament. Cool. I'll totally agree with you on that. But when you say there's more excitement for the women than the men, okay, I understand that a lot of people want that to be true. I understand that there are a lot of people that have an agenda and they're like, I want women's sports to be more exciting than men's sports. I get it. I really, really do. They might have a little bit of an agenda, but I understand it. Let's look at actual facts. And again, I'm not trying to dog on the women's game. I'm really not. I'm happy for them. But on ESPN, the women's tournament had 3 million people fill out a bracket this year. It was pretty impressive. I know here at the Dose, we didn't actually do that. Maybe in the future we would consider it. I don't know. But that's pretty impressive. 3 million brackets filled out. I mean, no wonder they're saying the women's tournament is more popular. 3 million brackets. Are you kidding me? It's a ton. Oh, wait. The men had 22 million brackets filled out. Okay, that doesn't seem like even as much excitement, let alone more than. That seems like less than, right? Okay, well, let's take a look at the television ratings, because obviously this must be about TV ratings, right? Well, in the opening round, the women are getting like 1.5 million viewers per game. Again, this is way better than we've ever seen. But wait, because the men are getting over 9 million viewers per game. Okay, so trying to figure this out. Based on actual facts, not what we're hoping for or what we're feeling inside, I feel like the women have more excitement. Now, you can feel however you want, but based on facts, I'm not getting where all the excitement is. I mean, are we just going to pretend that it's more exciting? Because factually, it isn't. You're not getting people filling out brackets. You're not getting as many viewers. You're certainly not getting as many people in the stands. So where is the excitement that you claim you have? Look, like I said, I'm happy for the women's tournament. I'm happy, most of all, for the kids playing. That they have some eyes on what they're doing. That they're getting recognized for doing a great job. Here is the problem. You don't have to make these dumb comparisons. It's stupid. And it isn't based in reality. And you know what it does? It hurts the product. When you come out and you say, we're getting more excitement than the men, everyone pushes back and goes, no, you're not. And now I don't even want to watch it because you're lying and you're being stupid. You're not helping the situation. Just rejoice in it. Just be excited. It was like the Caitlin Clark, Pete Maravich thing. You don't have to compare apples to oranges. You can just say, hey, this apple is great. Let's enjoy this apple. Instead of going, oh, and by the way, it's better than that. No, it's not. And no one thinks it is. You know, these people think they're helping the women's game. But when you're blatantly lying, you're not. Just enjoy whatever tournament you want to enjoy. But you ain't got to lie, Craig.
You ain't got to lie, Craig. You ain't got to lie.
There's no reason to. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com, where we have new articles going up every week. In fact, this week, I put out an article about the state of college basketball among the major programs here in Colorado. You're going to have some work they have to do this offseason. They both had very solid seasons, but they've got a little bit of work they're going to have to take care of. You can go find that on DailyDoseSports.com, but we also have links to the podcast. We have links to the YouTube video, and yes, we have links to Daily Dose gear. You might need a t-shirt. Now, we have more t-shirts than just the one that you see here in the Daily Dose studio. We've got basketball t-shirts. We've got football t-shirts. Number of items over there, and you can pick it in whatever color you want. Maybe you want like a sweatshirt. Maybe you need a hoodie. Nice, warm hoodies over there as well. Make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every single week and checking in with what is going on over there. Today on the show, we are actually going to be previewing that NCAA tournament as we get to the Sweet 16 and maybe taking a little bit of a look forward to the Elite Eight as well. We have another round of those NCAA basketball games coming this week, and they are going to be exciting to watch because we have some very interesting matchups. When this weekend ends, we are going to know who is in the Final Four. So today we're going to be looking and seeing if we can figure out who might end up there in the end. Plus, we do have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you today. I know that we've already seen some impressive performances in the NCAA tournament already. But today we're going to be talking about some performances in that tournament that you actually might have forgot about. You don't want to forget them. You just might remember some of the ones on our list today, so make sure you stick around for that. But first, we do have some news coming out in the world of sports that I want to discuss. And maybe the biggest story in sports this week is the situation with Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani. You know, Major League Baseball has now officially launched an investigation into Ohtani's alleged connection to his personal interpreter and close confidant, Ipe Mizuhara's involvement in illegal sports gambling. Kids, this is bad. The move comes after what has been an absolute wild week last week that included Mizuhara changing his story, an accusation that more than $4.5 million was stolen from Ohtani, and the IRS and other investigative agencies are getting involved in this. Okay, this is a wild story, and I know Ohtani talked a little bit on Monday, but I kind of want to lay out a few questions that we're going to need to have answers. And the things that we're hearing, honestly, they don't make any sense. And so I'm kind of trying to figure out, where is this going to go? Because this feels like a huge, huge problem for Major League Baseball. One of the biggest questions I want an answer to is, why are multiple media outlets not really giving us any information? It seems like they knew that Mizuhara had an involvement of some kind with an illegal bookie. And yet Ohtani and all his guys are like, well, we didn't know what he was doing. We had no idea. And then when they found out what the claims were, they kind of acted like they were being extorted and they were being robbed. But why weren't these publications like ESPN, like the LA Times, why weren't they going after Mizuhara when this all first happened? That seems a little bit weird to me. Are they just not telling us? Do they not want us to know? Or is somebody telling them to shut up? I don't know, but it's weird. I also want to know what happened during that short time period where Mizuhara changed his story. Because remember, first he said Ohtani directly transferred the money. And then he said Ohtani had no knowledge of the money. Okay, a few questions here. First, how did Mizuhara even get access to that account to wire that much money? Because usually to do that, like, you'd have to go through a process. You got a number of checks that would have to get approved that you'd have to have people sign off on. So how did he get this access? How did Ohtani's business manager or anyone else on his team not notice that much money missing? That seems like a lot of money. Also, during an interview, Mizuhara said that he had been gambling on sports since back in 2021, but that he never bet on baseball. And then the bookie said that same thing. Okay. We need to find out if that's actually true. And we need to find it out from people who are actually up on federal charges, because we know sometimes these guys will just say whatever. And here's the problem. I feel like that one question might be one that MLB doesn't want the answer to. And when we watch what they are now going to do, we're going to find that out. Because are they taking this investigation seriously? Are they really going to jump on it and try to find out exactly what was going on? Or are they going to go, yeah, we kind of looked into it, but I don't know, everything seems fine. Just don't worry about it. We'll just forget that. Hey, did you notice opening day's coming? Anybody notice? Nothing? Okay. I want to see how hard they jump onto this, because that's going to tell us a lot. And bottom line, here's the biggest problem for Major League Baseball. While leagues like the NFL and the NBA have suspended players temporarily for gambling, we've seen them kind of even get in bed a little bit with gambling. Major League Baseball, they've kind of taken that hardline stance against gambling. I mean, remember, they have banned Pete Rose for life, and it feels kind of personal. Well, you can't have that hardline stance this entire time and then change now, can you? If you do, I'm going to go ahead and call it. Pete Rose is going to be rushing to hire an interpreter as fast as possible. Kids, as the 2024 MLB season is coming quickly, this might be the worst story that could possibly be coming out for baseball. This feels really, really dirty, and I don't even know if we're going to get the full story. I don't think MLB wants anything to do with this. I think they wish it would just go away. And unfortunately, that is not going to happen. Let's move over to the NFL, where NFL owners have approved a rule proposal to ban the swivel hip drop tackle. That is what the league announced on Monday. The violation will result in a 15-yard penalty if flagged in games, but they did imply that it's also going to be kind of like that use of helmet rule, where maybe it didn't get caught in the game. They can come back and fine you. They could come back and suspend you for it later. Yeah. So even if you didn't get the flag, doesn't mean you're not going to get punished if you did do the hip swivel drop tackle. We'll see how that ends up going. In addition, two other proposals were also approved. Teams will receive a third challenge after one successful challenge. Previously, teams had to get both of their challenges correct to get one back. But I mean, if the refs screw one up, why should you get punished? I kind of like that. That proposal was submitted by the Detroit Lions. Also, they are completely revamping the kickoff. So kickers will continue to kick from the 35-yard line, but the other 10 players on the kickoff team are going to line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. At least 9 members of the return team will line up in what they call a setup zone between their own 35 and 30-yard lines, and up to 2 returners can line up in a landing zone between the goal line and the 20-yard line. Now, no one other than the kicker and returner can move until the ball hits the ground or hits a player inside the landing zone. Touchbacks will be marked at the 30-yard line, so you don't want to kick it into the end zone, and no fair catches will be allowed. In the event a team wants to attempt an onside kick, they will have to inform the officials of their intent, and then they'll be allowed to use the NFL's traditional formation. no surprise, onside kicks will be allowed. Now, I guess this new kickoff rule might bring a little excitement. They've tried it in a couple other leagues. I guess that's a good thing. However, the tackling rule, I think, is going to cause some confusion. And, you know, it was written to address a subset of kind of rugby-style tackling that we've seen spread in the NFL in recent years. And the problem with it, it's a really dangerous play. It really is. The tackling technique often results in serious injuries to the ball carrier, like broken legs or broken ankles. So the rule requires officials to note two actions. Okay, you ready for this? If a defender grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and then also unweighs himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing and trapping the runner's legs below the knee. Okay. Look, the NFL is king. I get it. The NFL primarily does things better than most sports leagues do. They just do. They have the most popular product, and usually they kind of bump around, but they eventually get things right. Here's the problem I have with the NFL right now, in general. Not just this rule, but in general. The NFL is asking way too much of their officials. And then they wonder why their officials get so much criticism. But you're asking them to judge something in a bam-bam play and saying, okay, you got to see, did they wrap with both hands or both arms and then drop themselves and pivot and twist and land on the left? Don't you think they have enough to watch? I mean, these are 70-year-old men out there. It's all they can do to run up and down the field. And we're asking them to judge twisting and dropping as well as intent, as well as did you really mean to touch the quarterback? Did you really mean to touch their helmet? Did you actually mean to touch their shoulder? And pass interference and illegal contact and defensive holding. We're asking too much of these officials. And I understand why we're doing it. Because here's what's funny to me. We're going to have the players' union push back on this. But remember, the players' union is the first one squawking about player safety. We need player safety. Players get injured. It ends their career early. We have to protect the players. Okay, so they put in a rule like this. They put in the rules protecting the quarterbacks, protecting wide receivers, protecting, of course, the offensive players. And then players go, hey, we can't play football now. What are you doing? Well, your union asked for it. What do you want? That is the problem that I'm having with the NFL right now. It just doesn't feel like you're applying any common sense whatsoever. You're asking these 70-year-old men to run up and down the field and judge so much in the spur of the moment, and then we're going to complain when they get it wrong, and I'll promise you, they're going to get it wrong. Now, they say the rule change doesn't completely eliminate the hip drop tackle, only the swivel technique that doesn't get used nearly as often. Do you see what I'm saying there? You're asking them to judge the difference between hip drop and swivel hip drop. I'm just saying, the NFL is going to screw this up. They're going to screw it up a million times. We're all going to be screaming about it. Just remember, we said it here first. And remember, the players' union keeps griping about player safety. I get it, but you can't have it both ways. And the NFL is trying to have it both ways. It can't happen. Finally, let's finish up in the world of college football, where Georgia running back Trevor Etienne was arrested this past Sunday at 4:30 a.m. and charged with a misdemeanor DUI. He was also charged with reckless driving, affixing materials that reduce visibility of his windows or windshield, and failure to maintain lane improper driving on the road. Etienne posted an $1,800 bond and was released after about an hour, according to Athens-Clarke County records. Now, Etienne is the brother of former Clemson and current Jacksonville Jaguars running back Travis Etienne. You might not realize this, but Trevor Etienne transferred from the University of Florida to Georgia this past offseason after he had two seasons with the Gators. Pretty solid seasons, not bad, but of course, Florida is not having nearly the success that Georgia is having right now. But here are a couple things to think about in this situation. Now that Etienne is at Georgia, there's some disturbing trends coming out of Athens right now. Think about this. Offensive lineman Devin Willock and staffer Chandler LaCroix tragically lost their lives in an automobile accident back in January of 23. And police allege that Jalen Carter, the defensive lineman from Georgia, was racing them before the crash. In total, at least 14 Georgia football players have been charged with moving violations in the past year alone. A staffer was arrested on charges of reckless driving and speeding less than 24 hours before their season opener this past September. And now, ETN is the first arrest of this current offseason. What is going on in Georgia? What happens when they're down in Athens that they suddenly forget how to drive? I don't get it. It makes no sense to me. I'm telling you, I know Georgia is riding the wave right now. They are big dogs every year. I get it. But I do have to ask, who in the world is teaching driver's ed at the University of Georgia right now? Is it Henry Ruggs? Because if it is, why is it Henry Ruggs? I would think you could get a million other people to teach driver's ed. For some reason, the Bulldogs have Henry Ruggs teaching it. Okay, coming back. March Madness has already been wildly unpredictable this year. And we still have the most important rounds yet to come. When we come back, we're going to preview those Sweet 16 games. And we're going to take a look forward to the Elite Eight. And see if we can figure out who just might be going to the Final Four. So the 2024 NCAA tournament has now reached the round of the Sweet 16, which will be starting on Thursday going into Friday, and me and the Elite Eight will follow that up on Saturday and Sunday. Okay, so what have we seen so far? Well, we have had surprises. We have had some great performances. We have seen some upsets, and we've also seen a lot of the top seeds still get through. But, you know, it's always interesting to me because it seems like we expect certain upsets to happen. And yet we always get blindsided by a few. Because we all thought, you know, hey, maybe James Madison or maybe Grand Canyon, they're going to pull off upsets. But how many of us had number 13 Yale beating number 4 Auburn in the opening round? Yeah, not that many. And how many of us had number 14 Oakland knocking out number 3 Kentucky? Again, not that many. But we did get number 12 James Madison beating number 5 Wisconsin. We did get number 12 Grand Canyon beating number 5 St. Mary's. We have seen some upsets. We have also had some really fun and exciting games. Hey, that shootout last Friday between Colorado and Florida, that was phenomenal. That was a really entertaining game. And I'm not going to sit here and say this is great basketball. I don't think it is. I think it's starting to look a lot like AAU basketball, but that has been a trend that has started some years back. But it was a highly entertaining game. It was really fun to watch. That crazy overtime game on Sunday night between Houston and Texas A&M, hey, I was at the edge of my seat. So we have had some good games. And we have had some great performances. I mean, the shooting of Oakland's Jack Golkey, yeah, highly entertaining. And I know he's getting a lot of grief, and I know a lot of people are saying, well, I don't know if he can play in the NBA. Hey, don't underestimate what Purdue's big man Zach Edey is doing. He is absolutely dominating games. And I don't know that he has a ton of help. Zach Edey has been very, very impressive. And yet, for the upsets, for the surprises, do you realize this is just the fifth time in tournament history since expansion that every number one and every number two seed has gotten through to the Sweet 16? It doesn't happen very often. And yet, in a year that we thought was completely wide open, actually, the big dogs have come through and performed. Did you know the average margin of victory per game is actually 15.4? That is the second highest through the first two rounds since the tournament did expand. There have been a lot of blowouts. I don't know that we expected that, really. So we have seen some surprises. So what can we expect in this round of the Sweet 16? Let's take a look at each one of these games. And we start on Thursday when the number 6 Clemson Tigers will be facing the number 2 Arizona Wildcats. Now, the Arizona offense, it is absolutely on fire right now. Do you realize Arizona went into the tournament averaging nearly 88 points per game? And you know what? So far in the tournament, they are keeping that pace up. Okay. So they've only played Long Beach State and Dayton, but they still are scoring big points. Meanwhile, Clemson is playing really good defense. Hey, they smothered New Mexico, who I thought might be dangerous. And then they shut down Baylor. That's a talented Baylor team. And they kind of made it look easy. And I'm going to give one other key for the Clemson Tigers. They actually make their free throws. I have had to watch so many misses so far in this tournament. Why can't kids shoot free throws? Honestly, if you're out there listening and you need a shooting clinic, let me know, because I'll teach you how to shoot. Because a lot of you, I can tell by watching on TV, you don't know how to shoot. Now, when I look at this game, Arizona should have a decided rebounding advantage. They are one of the best rebounding teams in the country. If Arizona doesn't rebound, no, they're going to be in big trouble. They better. Now, here's the problem. I look at this and I think Arizona should win this, but I just struggle to trust Arizona in this tournament. So Arizona, if you want to prove me wrong, go ahead. I'm going to take Clemson in a very, very tight game in that first game on Thursday. We move next to a rematch of last year's national championship game when number 5 San Diego State will be facing number 1 Connecticut. Of course, the Huskies won the title last year. They beat the Aztecs by 17 in that game. Well, this year, it looks very similar. San Diego State is again playing excellent defense. And I'll say this, if they can keep Connecticut under 70 points, I think they can pull off the upset. I really do. Because they are very, very good if they can keep you under 70 points. They win most of their games. Here's the problem. UConn is absolutely rolling. Donovan Klingon is one of the best players in the country. And honestly, in this game, I just want San Diego State to keep it close. I'm not expecting you to win. I like UConn, and I like UConn by double digits here. I don't know that it's going to be that close. Next up, we will have the number 1 North Carolina Tar Heels facing the number 4 Alabama Crimson Tide. Hey, the SEC has struggled in this tournament so far. Bama is one of just 2 teams left from that conference. Now, some of that is seeding. Some of that is maybe the SEC was a little bit overhyped. But watching Alabama is so entertaining to me. I don't know that they can sustain it, but they play at breakneck speed every single possession. They try to fluster you with their chaos. Here's the problem for Alabama in this game. North Carolina is one of the most experienced teams in the country, and the Tar Heels kind of like to play fast. They love to get out and score big points. So I know Bama's going to come out and be like, hey, we're going to throw chaos at you. We're going to get up and down the floor as fast as we can. And I think North Carolina's going to be like, yeah, cool. We like doing that. Now, I think Alabama can keep this close early. I even think they could lead early or at halftime. I just think Carolina's experience is going to lift UNC to a win in this game. And Alabama, as fun as they are to watch, I just don't know if they can stay in this tournament much longer. I think that's really tough to sustain over 6 games. Our final game on Thursday will be number 3 Illinois facing number 2 Iowa State. Now, if you hear Iowa State and you think back to those Fred Hoiberg Cyclone teams that were running up and down the floor and firing up threes, I will warn you ahead of time, that isn't this Iowa State team. Not at all. This Iowa State team can D you up, and they can shut your offense down completely, and then they turn you over and turn your turnovers into their points. Meanwhile, Illinois has a very long team, and I think they could pose some matchup problems for Iowa State. And Illinois crashes the glass at the offensive end really hard. And I honestly think that's going to be a key in this game. Who can rebound? If Illinois is getting offensive boards and getting putbacks or getting second shots out of this, I think Iowa State's going to be in trouble. This should be a close game. I'm going to take Illinois to squeak out a close one, but I think this could be a very entertaining game of clashing styles. Let's move over to the Friday games, where the first game on the docket has a chance to be really, really entertaining. I'm looking forward to it. Because the lowest seed still in the tournament is actually number 9 North Carolina State. I mean, I don't understand this team, and I told you this in our preview. I had no idea what to expect from the Wolfpack. Because they looked terrible down the stretch in the regular season. And then they got into the ACC tournament, and they got rolling, and they're playing really good basketball, and it kind of looks like they're still on that wild ride from the ACC tournament. I mean, NC State is contesting shots. They are rebounding. They are getting reasonably high percentage shots. And big man DJ Burns, that kid's a problem. He is a wide body. And NC State in this game is going to be facing a team in number 3 Marquette that doesn't have a lot of size. They're not a big squad. What does Marquette have? They have a little John Stockton-type point guard in Tyler Kolek, little lefty who just finds ways to make plays. You know, watching him against Colorado this past weekend, it wasn't just him standing outside knocking down shots. It was him beating off the dribble, getting into the paint and breaking down your defense and causing problems in the interior of your defense. That is dangerous. Now, I do think in this game, NC State has size. Marquette has speed. And Marquette is going to have to outquick the Wolfpack here. So, can they do that? I actually think they can. I believe that Marquette can use their speed, and the NC State is going to have to chase them around. Maybe Burns has a big game, but you can live with that as long as you don't let them knock down outside shots. I'm going to bet on the Golden Eagles knocking down some outside shots. And if they do, I think they'll be in great shape. If, for some reason, Marquette goes cold, get ready for an upset. Because North Carolina State is playing the kind of basketball that could send Marquette home. They're playing tough. They're playing physical. I just don't have that much faith that they can knock down shots when they have to. Not against a great team. Next, we have two teams that I'll be very honest. I'll be very open with you. I didn't expect much from. They have completely exceeded my expectations because we have the number 1 Purdue Boilermakers facing off against the number 5 Gonzaga Bulldogs. I thought both these teams might already be gone. I kind of expected them to. And yet, not only are they not gone, they've been dominant. Both teams seem to have saved their true game for this tournament, and now they're kind of rolling, and they've been very, very impressive. This is going to be a really fun game and a really fun chess match to watch between two very good coaches in Purdue's Matt Painter and Gonzaga's Mark Few. Now, Gonzaga actually has some big men inside. They can battle with Zach Edey. They have two 6'10 kids in Ben Gregg and Braden Huff. Here's my concern. They aren't that experienced, and they're not as experienced as Edey for sure. And so I can see both Gregg and Huff getting in serious foul trouble because they're not going to know how to play him. However, I am more impressed with Gonzaga in this tournament than I actually have been Purdue, but I get the feeling that this year, you know, with them losing last year to the 16, them coming back and returning most everyone, it kind of is starting to feel like you have to kill Purdue. Like, you can't knock them down. You've got to go kill them. I think Purdue is just playing really well. Here's what I want to watch in this game. Because we know what Zach Edey's going to do. He's going to be dominant. Can the guards knock down a few shots for the Boilermakers? And can Mason Gillis or Trey Kaufman-Wren contribute a little bit with some minutes and maybe contribute inside? Not necessarily outside. Can they drive in? Can they get loose balls? Can they do some dirty work? If so, I think Purdue's going to send Gonzaga home. Now, if the Purdue guards choke, I think Gonzaga can take care of business. I think they are better on the perimeter. I usually go with guards in this tournament, but I'm going to take Purdue in a close one because I think they rebound so well, I think they're going to be a problem. Won't surprise me either way here, though. Next up, the number 4 Duke Blue Devils will be playing number 1 Houston on Saturday night, and this is going to be a completely distinct clash of styles. You know, they say styles make for great fights. We could have a great game here. Because Duke has suddenly found their stride, and they're kind of getting that look like they could be a contender. They're knocking down shots. They're driving. They're really shooting the ball well. Granted, I know they've only beaten Vermont and James Madison, but they have beaten the brakes off of both of them. Duke is moving the ball really, really well offensively. They're shooting the lights out. They will be facing a Houston team that just pressures you with their defense for 40 full minutes. And, you know, unlike, like, say, Virginia, this Houston team can score. They can put up points themselves. When Duke has lost this year, and they have lost games this year, it has been because the opposing team knocks down shots, and eventually Duke gets behind. They can't trust their defense. Pretty soon things unravel. Now, that is both good news and bad news for Houston. Hey, if you hit shots, you can beat Duke. But Houston doesn't always hit their shots. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. I mean, think about it. On Sunday, there were times against Texas A&M, Houston couldn't miss, and they were dominant. And then late, they got conservative. They kind of went cold. They nearly lost that game to an A&M team that had no business being in the game. Okay, please prove me wrong, Houston. I believe Duke is going to win this game. I will be glad to own up and acknowledge the error of my ways. But Houston, you're going to have to prove it to me, because I think Duke's going to win this game. I really hope they don't. Anybody who listens to the Dose knows I'm not a huge Duke guy. I really don't cheer for Duke. And it's not even Duke. Of course, as usual, it's Duke fans. But I'm betting Duke wins this game. And you can prove me wrong, Houston. You're welcome to it. I think Duke comes out on top. We finish off the Sweet 16 on Saturday night with an absolute heavyweight fight. We have two big hitters here. And if I'm being honest, this might be the game I'm looking forward to the most. Because we have number 3 Creighton facing number 2 Tennessee. And again, the teams that have beaten Tennessee are teams that can shoot from long range. Well, Creighton can do that. And you have to keep Tennessee off the offensive glass, because if they miss, they go crash and they go get it and put it back in. Guess what? Creighton's pretty good at that too. Here is the difference between these two, and I think this is why I'm going to give an advantage to Tennessee. They're just physical. They're just tough. They go right at you. They don't back down. They will bang on you. They will beat you up inside. They will out-rebound you. If Tennessee manages to chase Creighton off the three-point line, I think the Vols are going to advance. I think they're going to be really, really tough to beat. Here is my fear for the Tennessee Volunteers. Head coach Rick Barnes never wins anything important. So I'm taking Tennessee in what I think is going to be a dogfight. And I'll be honest, I don't have that much faith. I think this is going to be a great game. I could see either team coming out on top, but I would probably lean toward the Tennessee Volunteers. I know, you know, the first two rounds are fun because we just have so many games. You've got 16 games, and then you've got 16 games, and then you've got 8 games, and then you've got another 8 games. It's so much fun. But if I'm being real honest, I have come to love the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 rounds, because you've kind of trimmed some of the fat off and you're left with the 16 best teams in the country. And I actually think we could be in for some great, great matchups this coming week. Okay, coming back, we're going to take a very brief look at some possibilities for that Elite 8. And then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Like we have talked about today, we have seen some great performances this year in the NCAA tournament already. Well, today, our Daily Dose Top 5 will be counting down a few great performances in this tournament that you actually might have forgotten. Okay, so I don't want to waste too much time talking about the Elite 8 when we don't, in fact, know who's going to be there. But we can kind of take a brief glimpse of at least some possibilities. Because in the East bracket, I am expecting to see UConn advance, where they would then face the winner of that Illinois-Iowa State game. Hey, I could see that being a very tight game. And for the sake of a good game against UConn, I'm hoping that these two don't just beat each other up. I'm hoping they have something left for UConn because I worry that Illinois and Iowa State might kind of take each other down to the end and really leave one of them left dead tired. Either way, I think UConn is going to the Final Four here. I think they're just too strong. So in the Elite Eight, I would have the Huskies advancing past either Illinois or Iowa State. Over in the South, I have Duke and Marquette moving on, which would make for a very interesting matchup because Marquette is the type of team that could give Duke some serious trouble. I would favor the Blue Devils, but I could see Marquette going out. Again, we talked about, can you knock shots down? Marquette can do that. If they can knock some shots down, yeah, they could end up taking Duke out. I would favor the Blue Devils, but Marquette would be a fun matchup. Over in the West, I have North Carolina facing Clemson, although I could see Arizona getting through too. But right now, I just really like the way UNC is playing. They're playing so well. They don't get rattled. So I guess if I had my choice, I would have North Carolina advancing as well. And then in the Midwest, I have Tennessee facing Purdue. And I actually think that the Vols could have the guards to knock Purdue off their path. I think that could be a really, really good game. I think foul trouble and who would be smart, who could take care of the ball, who could knock down clutch shots would ultimately dictate this, but I don't know. I think Tennessee could get there. And at the same time, I look at Purdue and I just look at Purdue like this year, I don't know, kind of on that mission. They're kind of on that revenge tour. And I think that Purdue could get through. So for all the upsets right now, I would probably have three number ones and then four in Duke getting through. Not the amazing upsets that we thought, and yet still some really entertaining basketball. You know, the first rounds of the 2024 tournament have provided some drama. They have provided excitement, but I'm really hoping that these next rounds actually ramp up and we get way more close games. We get way better finishes than we've had so far, because I do think, just looking at the schedule right now, we have some really fun matchups coming. I think this coming weekend could be an amazing weekend in the NCAA tournament. I'm hoping that that is the case. Okay, now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Five! You know, in the last 25 years across the NBA, the WNBA, and Division I, both men and women's basketball, there have been two instances of a player coming off the bench and attempting 20-plus three-pointers in a game without attempting a single two-point shot. Both of those players were named Oakland University Jack Golkey, and he did it both this year. Once on February 8th against Northern Kentucky, and this past Friday in their upset win over Kentucky in the first round of the tournament. Forget for just a moment how in the world a guy gets 20 three-point attempts per game, let alone 20 attempts off the bench. I'm not going to think about that. I'm really not, because that is insane to me. Clearly, that guy has two green lights in case one has burnt out. But, you know, it was funny because after the game, we saw a lot of Kentucky fans, you know, being classy, like they are. They were saying how Golkey would soon be selling insurance. And hey, he might. He's not as talented as those Kentucky kids. And yet, he sent those Kentucky kids home. And you know, I started thinking about that. Maybe he doesn't do anything else. Maybe he doesn't end up in the NBA. Maybe he ends up selling insurance, whatever, playing overseas. It wouldn't be the first time. Not at all. Because we have seen a number of players have really memorable runs in March Madness, and then we never really hear from them again. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down five guys that shot the lights out in March Madness, and we really haven't seen them much since. We start off at number 5. And we go back to the year 2010, where the Kansas Jayhawks were loaded. They were the number one overall seed. Head coach Bill Self had an explosive squad. They had gone 33-2. they had Sharon Collins and Cole Aldrich and the Morris twins, Markieff and Marcus. And the Jayhawks had destroyed Lehigh in the first round of the tournament. And now they're about to beat up on a team that had no chance in Northern Iowa. Unfortunately, Northern Iowa had other ideas. Ben Jacobson was their head coach, and he had a team that had some experience. And you know what? They had some toughness. Oh, and he had a little guard that would shoot his way into March Madness lore. In the opening round, the Panthers had actually scraped out a last-second win on a winning bucket against UNLV. Okay, but big deal. That's not Kansas. They're not going to do that to Kansas. But Northern Iowa jumped on the Jayhawks early. They led by 8 at half. But of course, we knew it was coming. The Kansas run came, and the Jayhawks actually cut the lead to just 1 with just over 40 seconds to play. Okay, so the Panthers are inbounding, and they have to go the length of the floor, and they're trying to break the Jayhawks press. They actually struggle a little bit getting it over the sideline. They push it up the floor, and they push it up to a guard by the name of Ali Farouk Manesh, who had absolute ice water in his veins. Now, he was the one that hit the winning shot against UNLV. Now he has the ball up by 1 against the top seed with around 40 seconds left. Well, he's in a 1-on-3 situation. But instead of pulling the ball out and stalling and waiting for his teammates and, you know, holding onto the ball and let's see what's going to happen. No. He pulls up against 3 Kansas defenders who are defending the paint because no way this kid's crazy enough to jack up a 3. Oh, except he did jack up a 3 and he buried it with 35 seconds left. Now it's a 2-possession game because the lead is 4 and Kansas had to end up fouling. It was over and the Jayhawks were going home. Now, for his college career, Ali Farouk Manesh averaged just 9 points and a few assists per game. He went undrafted, not surprisingly, by the NBA. And Northern Iowa would actually lose in the following round. But we still remember the kid with the crazy name. For the record, Ali Farouk Manesh is now an assistant coach up at Colorado State under head coach Nico Medved. Ali Farouk Manesh comes in today at number 5 of players that had huge games in March Madness, but we might have actually forgotten them just a little bit. We move next to number 4. And we move to a program that did actually win it all in this player's freshman season. And he was good that year. But in 2003, hey, the Syracuse Orange were Carmelo Anthony's team. Akeem Warwick was a big contributor. And like I said, guard Jerry McNamara, he was good, but he didn't have to be great. He just had to be good. Well, the following season, Melo was gone to the NBA, but McNamara and Warwick were back, and they actually took Syracuse on another great ride. The Orange went 30-5, and in the first round of the NCAA tournament against BYU, Jerry Mack was in the zone. Dude went 9 of 13 from three-point range, and scored an insane 43 points. Now, McNamara would play all 4 seasons at Syracuse, and obviously he had a lot of success. But he never really made it in the NBA. He played a little bit overseas instead. He is now actually the associate head coach at Syracuse under head coach Adrian Autry. But Jerry McNamara put on a show in March Madness. He comes in today at number 4. We reach our number 3 score in March Madness that is now a little bit forgotten. And while this program went on to incredible heights just a few years later, this guy is kind of forgotten. But when he was playing, oh, he was electric to watch. This is a hometown kid from Las Vegas. And it wasn't hard for UNLV head coach Jerry Tarkanian to get him to stay home and play for him. And, you know, he fit Tark's program very well. Because Freddie Banks was a player that loved to push pace, and he could shoot the heck out of the ball. In his senior year, he averaged 20 points and 4 assists per game. But you know what's interesting about Freddie is that maybe his best game as a college player in March Madness was a loss. In 1987, the Runnin' Rebels were rolling. They had Banks, and they had big man Armin Gilliam, and they had Gerald Patio and Gary Graham and Mark Wade and Jarvis Bassnight. Okay, the Rebels were stacked. They were 37-1, but they had to face Bob Knight and the Indiana Hoosiers in the Final Four. Hey, that's a tough draw. And it was an absolute shootout. Gilliam had 32. Indiana Steve Alford had 33, and Banks would score 38. But Indiana would go on to win, and then go on to win the national title. But fearless Freddie Banks had a performance that a lot of us still haven't forgotten. He would be drafted by the Detroit Pistons, but he never really did much. He ended up overseas as well. Freddie Banks may have been forgotten, but man, did he have an incredible run in March Madness. Freddie Banks comes in today at number 3. We reached number 2. And you know, we don't have to go back very far for this one. We just go back to 2019, where the Virginia Cavaliers were on their revenge tour after becoming the first number 1 seed in history to lose to a 16 seed back in 2018. Well, in 19, the Cavs would win the title. But in the Elite Eight, they got a pretty tough test. And they also saw one of the greatest performances in tournament history. Because Virginia would play number 3 seed Purdue, and a little guard by the name of Carson Edwards, who was not ready to go home yet. Virginia would eventually win the game 80-75, but Edwards was absolutely unconscious. He shot an insane 10 of 19 from three-point range. He scored 42 points. What is crazy is that by hitting those 10 threes, Edwards broke his previous record set just the previous week of 9 threes against Villanova. And in making those 9 threes, he had broken his previous record of 8 threes against Penn State. Carson Edwards shot the lights out on that run. He would eventually be drafted by Boston. He would be shipped to Philly. He ended up playing in Europe. He didn't really play in the NBA. But if you saw him play in that tournament in 2019, you will never forget it. Carson Edwards comes in today at number 2. So we reach our number 1 forgotten March Madness shooter. And we get to a guy that holds the record that Carson Edwards actually came close to breaking. But this guy still holds the record to this day. Now, many of us remember the crazy story of the 1990 Loyola Marymount team. Of course, the Lions had talented big man Hank Gathers. He was racking up crazy numbers. They were scoring points in bunches. And then Gathers would collapse and pass away in their conference tournament. Loyola would still go play in the NCAA tournament, and they actually made it all the way to the Elite Eight, but they were eliminated by UNLV. And you might remember some of their success that they had behind some great play by guard Bo Kimble, who was Gather's best friend. But what you may have forgotten was the play of another guard on that team by the name of Jeff Fryer. Fryer averaged 17 points per game, but against Michigan, in the round of 32 that year, he caught fire and he lit the Wolverines up. Fryer shot 11 of 15 from three-point range. He scored 41 points on just 20 total shots. Those 11 threes are still a tournament record, even now, with the trend of shooting the three all the time. Fryer shot it better than anyone. You know, he would eventually try it with Phoenix, but he didn't make it, and he ended up out of the NBA. You know, like I said, this year, we saw Oakland's Jack Golkey torch Kentucky to put himself in this group. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. Super Bowls, big fights, World Series, NBA, Stanley Cup playoffs, they can all underdeliver. But March Madness always lives up to the hype. There are always upsets, there are always surprises, and there are also always players like this that we will look back and remember them playing the games of their lives. Maybe they don't go on to bigger and better, but we still remember. And those stories are some of the best stories for March Madness every single year. Hey, next week on The Dose, we will be recapping the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, but more important, we will be previewing that Final Four and National Championship game. Plus, you know, we'll be keeping you up on all that is going on in the world of sports. So be sure to tune into The Daily Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
You ain't got to lie, Craig. You ain't got